It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 130. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Friday, Steelers Nation. Dave, the Pittsburgh Steelers are back on the practice field for day one of their three-day rookie minicamp that runs through Sunday. And so not all the Steelers, but the rookies, first-year players, undrafted players, tryout guys, football, in a sense, is back. And we got a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, we hope that this is going to be somewhat of a little different kind of direction of the show, especially for this time of year. Obviously, talk about rookie mini camp getting underway. We got a new player to talk about under contract, and hopefully I don't jinx it here because these interviews have not started yet. But we've got a couple of beat writers, Greg Bell, who covers the Seahawks, going to have him back on, and Chris Thomason, who covers the Denver Broncos, we have scheduled to have on today's show. Obviously going to be asking both those guys about Russell Wilson, because both of them have covered Russell Wilson recently, and each of those two teams have a wide receiver that we have talked about. Maybe sort of kind of, who knows if the Steelers might could have interest in trading for. So I have a feeling I know how some of those line of questions are going to be answered ultimately, but sometimes it's better to hear it from the horse's mouth and people on the other side who cover those teams there. But that's at least what we have planned for when it comes to this show. And hopefully I just didn't jinx everything. And speaking of jinxing, Paul Skeens, he's really a real person, right? It sounds
apparently,
like
apparently. I hope I get to see him in person this weekend. I'm planning to go to the game on Saturday, but the weather is not looking fantastic, which would be a peak Pirates thing to call up their top prospect basically ever and for the game to get rained out. So fingers crossed on that one.
All right, you don't have a great track record at the old ballpark either, do you?
We're going to put the Cazzora curse to the test here. I'm very sorry, Paul Skeens, in advance. All right, Dave.
It should be exciting.
Let's dive into things. Dave, you finally got your wish. You've been asking for this team to add a receiver, and Omar Khan said, say no more. How about one Scotty Miller, signed to a one-year deal, just announced officially by the team on Friday morning. It was announced, reported, I should say, back on Wednesday afternoon, I believe, 1 year contract for him. Don't know the exact financials, but we can assume it's a veteran benefit type of deal. That's what he signed last year with the Atlanta Falcons. And so the fourth Falcon to be signed to the Steelers roster since Arthur Smith was hired as OC earlier in the offseason. So the third veteran free agent wide receiver added after Quez Watkins and Van Jefferson, Scotty Miller, into the fold.
Championship. look, I mean, I'm not dissing Scotty Miller because he is what he is on tape, and you know, for what he's asked to do, and guy's got a lot of speed, and has overcome the odds coming out of Bowling Green, and he's managed to stick in the NFL to date. And good little player, I think, overall, good kind of utility guy. And yeah, we'll see if he can ultimately make the 53-man roster. But yeah, this isn't this they must have missed the add-on of the memo of significant playmaker. I mean, You know, this is another guy to add in a room. It's like Arthur Smith's collecting, you know, former Falcon players like their Infinity Stones or something, right?
You get a free haircut with the next Falcons player.
There you go.
That's where it is. No, I mean, listen, in a vacuum, the signing is fine. He's athletic. I think he's comparable in a lot of ways to Calvin Austin, even Roman Wilson. He'll know the offense that can help him accelerate his time in Pittsburgh and maybe even teach a thing or two to some of the other receivers and skill guys in the room. So we don't want to knock it too much. And I think he had more success in Tampa Bay the last couple of years, couple of, before coming to Atlanta in 2023. So he's shown he can produce and make some plays, but they really are testing the limits of your Dave Bryant stance of, I'll take anyone to a one-year veteran benefit contract, because they are really adding a lot of those guys. And the question just becomes, okay, that's all well and good, and there's no really risk to it and no big downside, but these are not the moves that are going to be the needle movers this team, I think, is angling to ultimately make.
Yeah, and I think that's where it comes down to right now. Wait to see if they add a needle mover at some point. And look, if this contract is what we think it is, at most you're going to have $167,500 invested in him. That's all that it would use up in available salary cap space if they gave him the maximum signing bonus of a veteran benefit deal. Yeah, we're having fun at the top of the show and saying that, you know, testing the theory of you can never have too many veteran benefit guys. I still subscribe to that. I mean, there's nothing wrong at its core with signing a guy like this, because you never know how injuries are going to play out. You can, you know, additionally, with him being a veteran and having played for Arthur Smith, like you said, this is a guy that can help you help the rest of the offensive players maybe learn some things a little bit quicker. He should be able to hit the ground running, whatever that looks like. And, you know, you never know how this will ultimately play out when the final 53-man roster is set here. But, you know, within that, though, this, once again, this is not the needle mover we're looking for. I do not believe. I mean, he's got some interesting things on tape, obviously, and I think you did a great job on the film room. He's got that speed is really evident there. He's not an awful route runner. He can get down the field, and you know, I think his longest air yard catch of his career is something like, I don't know, 47, 48 yards from Tom Brady in the end zone there. He scored a few times. You can use him on end around, but he is undersized. He can play inside. He has played inside and outside. You know, you tell me, it feels like his best work is on the inside, though, in the slot there. But just another guy on in the wide receiver room at this point.
Yeah, again, reminds me a lot of Calvin Austin. Small, fast, played at the time speed. Miller ran 4.36 coming out of college. I see that on tape. He's played inside and outside. I think the stat that you pulled was about a 50-50 split in terms of inside versus outside snaps last year. And even going back to Tampa Bay, he was primarily an outside guy because they had Chris Godwin, who's their primary slot receiver. So he's actually played more, at least in the NFL, on the outside than in the slot. Like Calvin Austin was an outside guy at Memphis and has played both in the NFL with Pittsburgh. So I don't want to typecast him as a slot only kind of guy, despite that lack of size. But the production overall is light, you know, getting off press coverage and just not obviously going to be a number two receiver that this team is angling for. So the frustration for me is you just saw all these kind of, you know, bigger name, more productive free agent receivers go off the market, and Michael Gallup, DJ Chark, even Odell Beckham Jr., who I was not terribly interested in signing, but it's more of a resume, more of a thought in terms of what that usefulness could be for Pittsburgh, a greater cost, but not significantly so either. So the question just comes down to, Dave, okay, what is the plan here? Is this just kind of depth and a way to create competition, to have all those guys go at it in training camp and let the best men win to make the 53? Because they're not all going to make the 53 between Austin and Jefferson, Watkins and Miller. Is this going to be a true Arthur Smith offense where it's one actual outside wide receiver and a bunch of tight ends and the rest of the guys kind of get cobbled together in the pass game? Is this just kind of buying time until they can hopefully land that, you know, marquee big physical X receiver. That all remains to be seen. But I guess the question I just go back to, okay, what is exactly their plan at wide receiver?
Looks like a sitcom, a new sitcom for the fall here. George Pickens, a rookie, and some guys.
Yeah.
That's the way it's looking right now. I mean, we've talked about Van Jefferson and Quez Watkins, and now you can add Scotty Miller into it. You know, who is Calvin Austin III? We still looking to try to find that out. Obviously, Roman Wilson being drafted, going to have a role in this offense. We have an idea who George Pickens is at this point and where George Pickens needs to go in his development moving forward. But I think you keep rolling back, and we're not the first ones to think this, but what happens if this is what your wide receiver room looks like and you're not able to run the ball maybe as effectively as you want to, and you end up with George Pickens. Look, if I'm a defensive coordinator looking at this wide receiver room right now as it stands with the Steelers, I'm thinking to myself, don't let George Pickens kill me.
Sure. I mean, right now he is so clearly the number one guy. We had the Raider email last show that talked about the concern of over double teams, and I kind of discussed the validity to that and some also areas where I thought maybe it won't be as bad as it looks on paper right now. What I just come back to overall, and as you always say, you got to let these things play out, and ultimately we'll see what the roster looks like come September heading into week one. But I think we're running into, we mentioned this last week or so, the Krispy Kreme dilemma, Dave, of diminishing returns. Of, again, in a vacuum, signing any one of these guys, Jefferson, Watkins, Miller is fine. But the more you keep adding these guys, the more you sit there and go, okay, we kind of get it. Like, you're adding number four, number five receiver types. It's not really doing a whole lot for you overall. There's got to be something more than that. So that's kind of, again, the crux of my issue right now.
You know, I used to have this, are you old enough to remember? Do you know what an icy is? Are you old
the
enough
slushy?
To know?
The slushies?
Well, the brand name was Icy, at least in the South. I guess and nationwide too. I mean, surely you know what it is a slushy, but
that's how I know it.
Okay. There was a brand growing up, and I know this was nationwide. It just probably was overrun by Slushy and Yuri, but we knew them as Icy's. You go to the Icy machine, and okay, they had Coke and grape and all these different flavors. But it's the same thing as a frozen drink. And yes, we even had these back in the late 70s.
The 1870s, they had them back then.
80s, all. Yeah. Well, I used to, anytime I'd be with my granddaddy, I'd try to con him into a pack of baseball cards and an icy, right? And anyway, he said, he used to make me use my own allowance money or whatnot for that. Long story short, he said, one time we got in there, he says, if you drink two small icies, in 5 minutes, I'll pay for them. Well,
okay.
I got introduced to what a brain freeze is. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes along the lines of how many Krispy Kreme donuts is too much, you know?
Right.
And I don't know if we'd even qualify some of these as Krispy Kreme quality here, but yeah, I mean, I get the point there, and that's where we're at. And that's why we do look, it's our job to kind of look at this roster as it's built, as it goes, but it is important to remember that it is May the 10th. It is first day of rookie mini camp. I still like to think that they're not done overall. Going to be interesting to hear what our two guests have to say today. I got a feeling I know how that's going to go with what their thoughts of adding maybe two particular or one of, you know, either one of these two wide receivers that we've talked about quite a bit. But what is it ultimately going to look like? Is there going to ultimately be a needle mover added at the wide receiver position? It does feel, though, if they add that needle mover, whatever that looks like, that maybe we're cooking with gas here.
Sure, if they can do that, all is not forgiven, but with this discussion we're having really becomes moot at that point, because they go out there to get a top guy, and it's totally fine to have Miller or Jefferson or Austin, whoever, as your backups. Yeah,
I don't know. Are we missing something on Van Jefferson? I mean, look, I'd like to. You talked a lot about Van coming out, you know.
I did. I honestly don't remember, but I trust you.
And you know, I'd like him for what he is, but I mean, he is what he is at this point, it feels like. And so is Quez, and so is everybody else they seem to have on this roster. And as much as, you know, as positive as you want to look at Roman Wilson, what he can, you know, hopefully eventually become, there is still going to be things that he has to work on as he gets into the NFL, and especially his rookie season, and you know, fitting. You know, in other words, I'm not expecting him to come in and catch 58 balls for, you know, whatever 12 yards per carry or 12 yards per reception would be on that, you know.
Sure. And while there's mixing and matching, who will play that X receiver spot that was Deontay Johnson's primary position? Wilson just said recently he's been working in the slot at the F position and the Z, which is traditionally George Pickens' spot. So less so, it seems like, when you're backside 3x1 as that X receiver that typically sees a lot more press coverage, which Wilson did not really see any of at Michigan. So I'm a little conflicted because, yes, it is May 10th, and there's still months before September, but the bulk of the offseason is over. The free agent, you know, pool is all dried up. The draft is over. So there aren't a lot of avenues to go get that marquee guy besides a trade, which we'll see. I mean, there's no, Pittsburgh does not have complete control over their ability to trade for insert receiver here. The upside, though, to signing guys like Miller, I think, to me, is you're creating that competition. You're kind of putting all these guys out there on the field come training camp and just say, let the best guys win. And I think probably two of that four-man group will make the team, again, of Watkins, Jefferson, Austin, and Miller. And you just let them have at it and just say, who makes the most plays in camp? You know, dangle that carrot out there. You'll get a roster spot. And that will, I think, in Pittsburgh's view, let that competition, the cream, rise to the top.
Right. And look, it's not like you're heavily invested in any of these guys, and even Calvin Austin III, right? You know, right. Still on a rookie contract. So you're not beholden to any of these guys because of salaries and all. You legitimately can, whoever does the most gets the roster spot. And you know, that's the way it should be.
Sure. So I get the value in that. But even knowing whoever does make it from that group should not be the number two receiver on this team, even if that's not going to be the most critical role in a run heavy offense where Arthur Smith typically doesn't have, at least in recent years, you know, two top receivers.
The icing machine was down also more times than not.
Like the McDonald's ice cream machine.
Growing up. My
icy story, and I still have them today, but as a kid, I would get the blue raspberry one from the Little Caesars inside the Kmart, neither of which exist today. They're both closed down, but that's my icy story there.
You know, the good thing, the fun thing about that as well, too, showing my age here, is occasionally they would have the commemorative plastic football helmet cups, or the baseball cups and all like that. So you'd always try to cycle through. You'd get the clerk to say, I want a Pirates one, you know, and, mm-hmm. and they're obviously all assorted in there, or you want a Steelers one and all like that. So now I wish I still had some of those plastic cups, but that was a highlight of getting an icy sometimes as well too.
All right, there you go. So any other thoughts
walk
here?
Walk down memory lane.
Exactly. And
back when baseball card, man, you could get a pack of baseball cards for like, I don't know, it seemed like I remember them for like 15 cents at one time. And I can remember them at 35 cents and all like that. But anyway.
Showing your age here today, yeah, Dave.
But moving us forward.
If you could build a time machine to 2-3 years ago, this receiver would look pretty decent with Jefferson and Watkins, et cetera. But that's not where this team is at. Hopefully, you know, maybe their thought is they could recapture the magic on one of these guys, even Callaway from 2021. And if one of those guys can be what they were a couple of years ago, then maybe you have something there. But again, it just seems to be, you know, a similar situation. Pittsburgh adding a receiver, but still needing to add at least one more.
All right. Probably some more wide receiver talk later in the show if our two guests come through.
All right. Certainly, Dave. Let's go to Najee Harris now and just kind of the quick 30-second summary of where things are at there. 97 The Fans, Paul Zeiss. I always Zeiss. Don't know the Zeiss pronunciation on that. It was kind of had to be like wrestled out of him, but he had said that a little birdie told him that Najee Harris had asked the team to decline his fifth-year option because he wanted to play somewhere else after 2024. Shortly after that, his agent, Najee Harris's agent, Doug Hendrickson, shot back on Twitter and said, basically, get a new source. Your little birdie is wrong. And so flatly denying that Najee Harris asked the team to do anything about his fifth-year option. So that's where things stand on that. We didn't write about the initial report there, but about the response. It did not seem credible to begin with. But that's where things are at on kind of the Najee Harris front.
Let's just look at this at its core, okay? How many times have you seen it come out at any time since the fifth-year option has, you know, been in the CBA where you've heard of a player saying, "Oh no, I don't want you to pick up the fifth-year option." Okay, that's the first part of this. The second part of it is, try to wrap your mind around a player playing a running back position. And you know, Najee is a little bit older, right? How old is Najee now?
26, I think.
Okay. And how many career touches does Najee have at this point? And he obviously has not missed a game.
Right. He has, I'll get the number for you, 978 in the NFL and was a four-year player at Alabama, two-year starter.
All right. And how old is he again?
He just turned 26 in March.
Okay. And he plays what I think we would both agree is the most fungible position in the NFL, right?
Right.
All right. So you're going to tell me that, and this is a guy that also was, correct me if I'm wrong, chiming in a little bit about this time last season on the running back market how it's deflated and you know, he needs to help hopefully do his part in getting it, you know, at least reset or increase and all like that. So you're telling me you add all those things to together and, oh yeah, he, even if his fifth year option was picked up, that he still does not get that money until next season. And which means he has to make it through another season to either get to stay healthy and get to next season. And oh yeah, if that fifth year option was picked up, it would be fully guaranteed on top of it, nearly $7 million, which once again, by not having it picked up, he's not guaranteed anything past this season. Now, the last year, you know, this season of him being a former first round draft pick, obviously what he's scheduled to earn in 2024 is fully guaranteed, but you know, it's less than what, $3 million, I think, when it comes to that. So you telling me he's going to come out and say, "Oh no, I'm good. Don't pick up my fifth year option because I don't want that fully guaranteed." Even if he was miffed at the organization, and even if his long game was to, I'd really like 2024 to be my final year in Pittsburgh because I'd really like to see what's out there. The long game plan for that would be, go ahead and have the Steelers pick up the fifth-year option, at least so that money gets fully guaranteed in 2025. And then, oh yeah, after the fact, he could say, after the 2024 season, "Look, I want out of here. Trade me," you know. And then on top of it, at least having that fifth-year option tacked on to his contract, it has him under contract one more year, which makes him a little bit more marketable if indeed the Steelers were trying to trade him to another team, because teams would obviously have him under contract at the time. And then once again, who knows what's going to happen in 2024 for him? It would be one hell of a gamble to say, "Don't pick up that fifth-year option on me. I want to get through to the 2024 season, and I feel I can hit payday even greater than that nearly $7 million of fully guaranteed money next offseason." In short, there's nothing you could tell me that would have me fathom that a player, especially him playing the position that he plays, would actually want the team not to pick up the fifth year option.
I wrote about after the option was declined, there's value in it being declined, that he gets a year closer to free agency and secure that second contract. So I could see the argument of why he wouldn't mind the team declining it. But I've never heard of a player, to answer your original question, having any sort of say or input in his fifth year option decision. If somebody has, then let me know. But I'm not aware of a single case. That's a team decision that the player has no say, has no leverage in really overall. So that's where I come from not really believing that report overall, which was barely even framed as a report. I think it was even said as speculation that is now kind of turned into a report, but it didn't seem, they weren't confident in saying it. And so I don't really believe it from that aspect alone. But I think it's not a true story. I do think there is value in Harris having it declined to hit. You know, if he has a good year, buying a good offensive line, stays healthy, he'll cash in next offseason. But there's nothing that tells me he's dictating terms to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, all due respect to people speculating, reporting, whatever. I cannot be, you know, convinced to buy any of that.
Sure. And we didn't plan on writing about it. We weren't going to talk about it. But when his agent weighs in, then it becomes more of an official thing where there's an actual response from the agent to shoot it down and deny that this is true at all. So that's the reason why we're spending any time on it at all.
Right.
All right, Dave, where to from here? Speaking of, not really speaking of, but some more Steelers news that came in yesterday. One potential signing, Bud Dupree, potentially back on the Pittsburgh Steelers radar, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. Dupree had just wrapped up a visit with the Chargers, but Schefter noted that Dupree has been still talking to his former teams in the Atlanta Falcons and the Pittsburgh Steelers, of course, making him a first-round pick several years ago, and he had that breakout season and then towards ACL in 2020, signed that long-term deal with Tennessee, didn't work out there, spent last year with Atlanta picking up 6.5 sacks and playing in 16 games. So your thoughts on a potential reunion with Bud Dupree?
Depends on the cost, I think, because obviously you got a guy, what is Bud now, 31? When does he turn? Did he just turn 31? His birthday, I believe, is in. So he just turned 31 in February there. Obviously on the wrong side of 30. Not to play, you know. Although he had a pretty decent season, I guess, overall last year. But, you know, this is – it kind of runs in line. You know, you want him or Marcus Golden, because basically they are kind of the same player. Neither one of them are going to give you anything on special teams. If you signed either one of those guys, it would be for obviously as backup duty behind Alex Highsmith and TJ Watt. You know, how much of that's going to take away from a guy like Nick Herbig and his development? Keep going back to what is the price? I mean, those guys have value, depends on the price with either of them. Talking about Golden as well too. So there is value in having guys like that, you know, with the experience in the organization, knowing the culture, knowing kind of what you're going to get out of them and not get out of them as far as special teams play goes and all like that. So, you know, it comes down to, what is the right price, and is he fully on board with what his role would be?
Yeah, we've been occasionally asked about Dupree this offseason, and I've brushed it aside. I mean, if they want to do it, whatever the cost would be, I know it would be cheap. It's not going to be, you know, something that's going to really impact things salary cap wise financially. It would be fine to do. I would not be, you know, 100% against it, but I've been generally fine with the room and how it looks right now, how it's constructed. My concern would be, you know, I want Herbig to be the number three. I think he's earned that ability and the trust to, you know, gain and garner more snaps than he had last year. Is kind of splitting time between himself and Marcus Golden is that kind of number three, number four. And Dupree's lack of special teams value is a bit problematic. And they kind of ran into those issues with Marcus Golden last year, inactive for one game because they needed some special teams help. And he wasn't playing much, would play 5 or 7 snaps defensively. It just, you know, it's a game day hat that isn't doing a whole lot for you. And, you know, I like the construction of Herbig as your number three, Jeremiah Moon, your number four special teams guy. So I'm good with its current form, but I will give Pittsburgh credit to this is I think they're realizing just how important it is to have really quality pass rush and edge depth. In past years, they've not always had that. To go back to, what was that, 2022? Oh,
a couple of years right in a row. It seemed like both offseason we were screaming for, got to get some depth on this thing.
Right. So, and I think Pittsburgh, to their credit, did so last year by drafting Herbig and by signing Golden. And those, I think, both proved, you know, especially Herbig, valuable. And just to have that depth where if somebody does go down, yeah, they're not going to replace TJ Water outside Smith 1-to-1, but you're not, you know, really having a big drop off here to Malik Reed or Jameer Jones or somebody like that and really scrambling where your pass rush just tanks when you don't have TJ Watt or Highsmith in the lineup. So on that alone, you know, a guy comes in, don't think he'd be guaranteed of a roster spot. You know, I would get that, but as long as Herbig is still that number three and really not losing snaps significantly to Dupree, then I'd be okay with it. But my concern would be, okay, Dupree's your number four. He's not playing on special teams. He's getting a couple snaps a game. Is it really maximizing your roster?
Right. I mean, I'd welcome him back, but you know, it'd have to be cost effective. I mean, you'd have to know the Steelers are looking at that as well, too. I mean, what is cost effective, especially if you're talking about a 1 year deal? It feels like nothing more than two.
What did
and
he play for last year?
Huh?
In Atlanta. What did he play for last year in Atlanta? What was his contract?
I have to look.
1 year deal, quick. I assume. Couldn't have been. His contract can't be much, whatever he ends up signing for with whoever. I don't think it's going to be much of a sticking point. It looks like $3 million he played for last year.
He had a base salary. It looks like of 1.24, had a prorated about, what was his cash paid? $2.97 million was his cash paid out last year.
Now, he did have 6.5 sacks, and so, as you said, kind of bounced back. I think he'd be costing about the same this year.
Right. Nothing more than $3 million.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Again, might have some suitors, the Chargers potentially going back to Atlanta. We'll see. Wouldn't be against it, but as long as Herbig is still the guy, the number three, then I'm good with it.
Right. So we'll see how that plays out. It doesn't sound like anything's imminent at this point.
Yeah, they may wait some time on that and Dupree kind of weighs options. I'm not entirely sure when that decision could come. Obviously did not sign with the Chargers. We'll see if that happens down the road, but we'll let you know for sure. All right, Dave, the Steelers have released their 2024 rookie minicamp roster. 43 players will participate this week. And of course, the 7 draft picks led by Troy Fa'utanu, Zach Frazier, etc. Some select first-year players and confirming, as you noted, Corey Trice Jr., not part of that group, not eligible, despite not playing a game last year, but because of the time spent on IR, that becomes a credited season, correct? Credited?
Right, that's correct.
Okay. Really shouldn't. I don't know why that does, but that's a debate we had on a recent podcast. And so Trice will not be there, but other first-year players will be. And then 5 undrafted free agents and 21 tryout players. We actually knew most of the tryout players, which typically we don't. There were a couple of names that were new to that list, but we knew the veterans, guys like Anthony Everett, Jonathan Ward, who I think Ward's got a chance to make this roster. I think Everett as well, considering the potential need in the slot right now. Anything stick out to you about this roster? Any thoughts, Dave?
Who were some of the tryout guys that we had not identified?
A couple of specialists, Caleb Shudak from Iowa, who spent time in Tennessee. The one maybe most notable is Johnny Lumpkin, who's listed as Lampkin on the roster, but it's Johnny Lumpkin, who was an undrafted free agent in 2023, big, long tight end with some athleticism, spent time with the Patriots, but there really weren't any super notable tryout names that we had not identified. I caught one last night on the team website, Mark Jackson from the IPP, the International Pathway Program, the kicker, who is an Irish and still is an Irish goalkeeper, who was part of the, again, the IPP, but also took part in the Steelers kicking clinic in Dublin last month and actually got a lot of praise from Sean Sweezum and Jordan Berry, who ran the camp and has been invited to a rookie minicamp, which is pretty cool.
All right, and let's see. Bradley Robinson, a long snapper that's got a little bit of experience.
7 years in college. Bradley Robinson earned 3 degrees. I don't think he's playing the NFL, but he tore his ACL in 2022. And then was at the pro day for Ohio State even this past year, getting just an opportunity there. So, that's a 7-year long snapper. That's a fun story.
All right. Let's see. And I think the team has officially announced to you. I think we had already knew that officially. who was the one that had the undrafted free agent that had agreed to terms? Was it Welshoff, I believe, that had officially signed his contract? And now I think the other four undrafted free agents of John Reese Plumley, Beanie Bishop, Dejon Edwards, Jacoby Windman. And I think that's the other ones that have officially signed their contracts now. So I would expect those to hit the official transaction wire on the NFL sheet later today. So probably by Monday or Tuesday, we'll know the signing bonuses on those guys.
Let's see. One other small note. I know this won't concern many people, but we're nothing if not thorough. Xavier Wade from Ferris State was reportedly coming to rookie minicamp. He is not listed on the roster of tryout players. Don't know what happened there, but neither of the Ferris State guys will come to Pittsburgh. Sean Stevens got signed by the Eagles, supposed to come to Pittsburgh, but he got scooped up, and it does not appear Xavier Wade is in Pittsburgh either.
All right. So what, 43 players in total, 21 of them being tryout players, 12 of them being rookies in the 7 draft picks, 5 undrafted free agents, and 10 total term first-year players.
Any of those first-year guys strike is someone just worth maybe not necessarily say watching this weekend, because it's such a, you know, install foundational weekend and we'll see those guys in training camp. But you know, the guys that had been Steelers, there's 10 of them, as you mentioned, David Perales, Jack Coletta, the fullback, Joey Fisher, et cetera. Anybody that you want to hopefully learn more about?
Yeah, Coletta maybe, I think sticks out. Who was the other one here? Deesh has got some size to him at listed at 6'7", out of Arizona State. And we know a little bit about Perales coming out of as an undrafted last year. I think that's it.
Yeah, I think Fisher's interesting. Big, strong run blocker from Shepherd. Was with the 49ers and then came over to Pittsburgh early, leave September. And so, you know, offensive line is looking pretty crowded right now, but just a guy that might have some skills in camp. Beach is versatile. He's even listed as a guard tackle. He's played basically everything at Wisconsin. And that was with the Texans last year and moved around some. So we'll see on that. And then Coletta for that fullback aspect of Pittsburgh. You know, does Connor Hayward get a look once they get into, you know, full OTAs? We'll see. But Coletta's a guy that, you know, might have an opportunity just based on the offense he's playing in.
And look, any of these guys that you know, of them that ended last season, which I think it's a pretty good number of them here that were on the practice squad the end of season last year, got signed to futures. I mean, the team thought enough about them to keep them, you know, to A, re-sign them to futures deals, and B, you know, sometimes after drafts, you see some of these guys go out the door, and it's still possible depending on what happens here and how many of these tryout players maybe they want to add and all like that. But I think it's a testament for some of these guys to, you know, at least stick around past the end of last season, even though they were on the practice squad.
Yeah, for sure. And this team right now has 3 open roster spots. And so you could see some tryout guys get signed. Typically they're signing between 1 and 3 tryout guys per cycle, no guarantee. And just kind of depends on the year, but there are open roster spots for them to do so. Also, when I mentioned this came in right before minicamp a couple of days ago, that Phil Dracovic, the former quarterback, switched to tight end, has been invited to rookie minicamp as a tight end. So he was a big 4-star guy that local native, went to Pine Ridge High School, went from Notre Dame to Boston College, had a really good year a couple years back at Boston College, and then things really fell down from there. Transferred to Pitt, got benched, moved to tight end. Just kind of one of those curiosity stories here in rookie minicamp.
Someone had some meme on my timeline.
Oh, yeah.
At least the Steelers were able to identify quickly that this Pitt quarterback couldn't play quarterback.
Oh, man.
something along that line. Very, very, very crude as far as that goes. But it did get a chuckle out of me, as crude as it was.
Just to double back, again, the 2 names I watch here that are pretty obvious, but from the tryout pool, the veterans, in Jonathan Ward, the running back, who's got a well-rounded skill set, can catch, play on special teams, could use an extra running back for depth here in training camp, and then Anthony Everett, who played with Baltimore, I think started 14 games 2-3 years ago, picked off 3 passes, didn't take a defensive snap last year, but if he can get a look in the nickel role, because right now, again, there is just really not much there. There's Beanie Bishop, some futures guys, but that slot corner until they add somebody. And I think they will add somebody, probably a former Steeler, you know, Peterson, Sutton, we'll see. But Everett's a guy, would not be surprised if he got signed.
All right. Let's see. And they practice today, tomorrow, and Sunday. I don't believe the Sunday session is open to the media. Obviously, some interviews with the draft. You know, I would imagine the draft picks and undrafted guys will get the most attention from the media these next couple of days. So be passing along pertinent things that some of these guys say.
All right, Dave, anything we're missing? Any other topics you wanted to discuss today?
You tell me what else was. I think we hit most of it here, didn't we?
Yeah. Let's see. Cam Hayward was on. Seth Meyers, I guess that'd be technically Friday morning, but nothing too notable there. He did have on Kevin Colbert on his Not Just Football podcast that took place during Saturday's draft. Did anything from Colbert really stick out to you overall?
He said, don't reach, right?
Yeah, that there were predictable responses to that and some of the arguable reaches that Colbert made.
Let's see. They can read about that on the site. I don't think we got to go diving deep down. The Titans going to reportedly keep Treylon Burks, I guess, or at least they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's always going to be a team's public posture, but wrote about that even after signing Tyler Boyd, they're still high on Treylon Burks. And listen, Boyd's on a one-year deal. I think D-Hop's in the last year of his contract. And so you could try to argue that these are short-term things and not, you know, the roster is going to have turnover. But I would not be surprised if Burks got dealt here sometime in August, September.
Okay.
All right, Dave, let's do this. Now we have two interviews today with two opposing beat writers, getting some information on some potential Steelers and some current Steelers. We'll talk to two men today, starting off with Greg Bell, who we've heard from before, covers the Seattle Seahawks for the Tacoma News Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter at GBellSeattle. And then after that, we'll talk to Chris Thomason, who covers the Denver Broncos for the Denver Gazette. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Thomason. Get his thoughts on Cortland Sutton, on Russell Wilson. So we'll take a pause and start things off with Greg.
All right. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast, the Friday edition here. And as promised, we have on a friend of the show, been on several times. He covers the Seattle Seahawks for the News Tribune, obviously in Seattle. Covered him for quite a few years. He's our go-to guy for all things Seahawks here. Of course, talking about Greg Bell. You can follow Greg on Twitter/X at G Bell Seattle. You should already be doing that by now. So with that, Greg, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex. Thanks for carving out some time on this Friday, May 10th. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks, guys. Good to talk. Always great to talk to Steeler fans. I think I told you once I grew up 45 minutes west of Three River Stadium, one for the thumb all those years.
Absolutely. We know you have links back to the Pittsburgh area here. Greg, we know your time's precious here. We're going to get to the elephant in the room, but I'm going to change that. We're going to call it the unicorn in the room there. I think it's appropriate. Look, we listened to your radio show, I think yesterday or the day before, and you know, you were really looking forward to coming on Pittsburgh to talk about DK Metcalf for 15 minutes. No, we're not going to do 15 minutes on DK Metcalf. But look, sometimes it's good to get it from a mouth on the other side here. Obviously, Steeler fans as a whole think that this team needs another wide receiver in this room. The two names as trade candidates that, you know, seem to be talked about most are DK Metcalf and Cortland Sutton with the Broncos here. You obviously don't think there's any chance whatsoever post June 1st. And let's make it clear that if the Seahawks were magically to do anything related to DK Metcalf, it would have to come after June 1st because of cap stipulations and all like that, post June 1st designation. Tell our listeners why this is indeed a unicorn in the room when it comes to DK Metcalf and why you're really convinced that nothing's going to happen on the Seattle side here.
Well, Dave, a unicorn's a good term for him. He's 6'3", 6'4". He's almost 240 pounds. He's run in Olympic trials in the 100-meter dash. He can jump through the roof, 40-inch-plus vertical leap. there is no defensive player in the world who can match up with him physically. There are no 6'4", 239 corners that run like he does and jump like he does. Having said all that, you would think he's broken every receiving record there ever was. That's not been the case here in Seattle. Some of that's been his own doing. At times, he's a very volatile and emotional player and lets other teams get in his head. Other times, it's the offense's problem of either not getting him the ball or not having proper pass protection to allow him to get down the field for Russell Wilson and now Geno Smith to get the ball to him. But just purely on a physical nature and a physical scale, he is one of one in the league. They decided a couple of years ago to give him a $70-plus million contract, and that runs out after next season. So it's true of any veteran in the NFL who has 1 year after the current one remaining on its deal that people start looking at the cap hit and what it would save the team if they traded or cut him, and they're never going to cut DK Metcalf. But because of the Seahawks being up against the cap and they're going to have to clear some space in order to sign their 8 draft picks here in the coming months before training camp, then you get into suppositions and speculation. Here's the difference between when they re-signed DK Metcalf to his second $72 million contract a couple years ago and now. Back then, they still had Russell Wilson, and they were staring at having to re-sign Russell Wilson for the top of the market, $250+ million, the deal that Denver eventually gave him. Now they have Geno Smith going on age 34, whose contract also runs out after 2025. It doesn't look like, because of age and where they may want to go, that they're going to re-sign Geno Smith at quarterback. They could have Sam Howell, who they traded with Washington to get right now as the backup. He's also signed through 2025. He could be the quarterback of the future, the way they're talking. If not Howell, perhaps would be someone they draft next year. But the point is, they're about to get a lot cheaper at quarterback, which would allow them to afford keeping DK Metcalf and make him the centerpiece of the offense and have an inexpensive quarterback to build around him with the $100 million deal. The Seahawks are much more in a position than they were 2 or 3 years ago to re-up DK Metcalf yet again. He's still only 27 years old. Having said all that, it would, if the Steelers gave DK, the Seahawks a first round pick or multiple first round picks, the Seahawks would listen. I'm not saying they would trade it, but the Steelers aren't going to do that. Not for a guy who then they have to turn around and re-sign for $100+ million next year. That's why I think this all conspires to DK Metcalf being the centerpiece of the Seahawks, not just for this year, but the coming years. They just need to have an offense and an offensive line that allow them to maximize his talents.
When you look at his situation, I think he showed up for it because their start early in the offseason because of new head coach. And I think I've seen the pictures of him. So he doesn't look like he's disgruntled at all. He's got the new contract, although he's not top of the market. Are there any rumblings about him wanting more money? I would suppose that most of the talk that you guys are having to do about DK Metcalf is stuff that's been trying to be put out there by other fan bases and the like. Is that correct? So, in other words, there's nothing happening on that side of the fence that would cause you to have to ask about his situation, right?
Correct. Dave, if I asked about DK Metcalf's contract situation right now, they would all look at me and say, what are you talking about? That's not a topic. It's not a concern for them. The Seahawks typically, for foundation players, redo or extend the deals in the summer leading into the final year of their contract. So I would look for the Seahawks to re-up him in the summer of 2025, right at the beginning of training camp next year. Again, knowing that they're not going to have the big albatross quarterback contract that they've had for the last decade since Russell Wilson rose to prominence. The biggest talk about DK Metcalf right now, guys, is can he move into the next phase of, one, leadership on the field, eliminating some of these extracurricular penalties on sportsmanlike conducts, pushings and shovings that he gets with defensive backs who yap at him. And two, can he become the lead receiver, not only in the NFC, but in the NFL with the offense as constructed? That's the bigger, longer term thing that they've yet to, it's just been elusive so far that they haven't had an offense functioning well enough, especially in the offensive line, to maximize his talents. That's really what the talk about Metcalf in Seattle is.
I'm a huge cap nerd. Follow, you know, obviously the Steelers stuff, and I like it looking at teams' situations around the league, and I find their situation this offseason really enthralling because it doesn't look like they have many restructure candidates, which DK Metcalf is one of those. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think they can clear almost $6 million that they just do a normal restructure on him. Anyway, I'm just enthralled with watching them maneuver around this, being up against it right now. Do you think we see a DK Metcalf restructure in the coming weeks?
I'm not sure that it is an option, and they've mentioned that they've got other veterans that they could do it with, and he's one of them. Draymond Jones, defensive end, is another one. They've already done it with Tyler Lockett. They've already done it with Geno Smith. So you just take a look down at the top salary cap hits for 2024, and you can deduce who the next ones are, and that's Metcalf and Draymond Jones. So there are other things they can do, and they may release a veteran or two. Eskridge is a couple million-dollar wide receiver, a non-guaranteed contract they recently re-signed that really has no place here, especially with Jaxon Smith-Njigba's emergence. So, yeah, they could do that. And he would then, of course, add $6 million or so onto his cap hit next year, which currently is supposed to be 20 – I'm talking about Metcalf, just currently supposed to be $29.5 million, second only to Geno Smith on the team. Tyler Lockett may not be around in Seattle or play in the NFL beyond this year. He's talked a lot about that. And he's not hiding the fact that he's got other things besides football in his life. And now that he's in his early 30s, he may not play much beyond this year, which even furthers the Seahawks probably looking at DK Metcalf as their foundation with Lockett on his way out.
Greg, just one question for you. Just looking at, and I know he's still relatively new, Mike McDonald, but there was a lot of controversy discussion about him tearing down some of the photos from the Pete Carroll era, kind of some of the hallmarks of the situation of Seattle's kind of glory years. Is there any, how valid do you think that is? How are players reacting to it? What's been your impression of Mike McDonald so far?
Well, fans overreacted to that, Alex.
Sure.
It is stark, that hallway that used to have all of Pete Carroll's greatest hits, basically the Super Bowls and the Fail Mary and the Beastquake run and all of that, are now painted white and painted over. But that's leadership 101. You come into a new organization as a new first-time leader. He's a first-time head coach at age 36, youngest coach in the league. And you establish your legacy. You don't ride off of anybody else's. And you establish the day zero is when you get there. You acknowledge that. I mean, it's not like they've ripped everything out of the facility that's former. The Lombardi Trophy is still in there. The other hallway around the corner from this much talked about hallway still has every player who's ever played for the Seahawks and their signatures, and still has Sean Alexander and Steve Largent and Mike Holmgren and their banners hanging from the ceiling outside the indoor practice facility. So McDonald hasn't stripped it of that. Mm-hmm. He just wanted that particular hallway between the weight room and the indoor practice field to represent their time. And it wasn't, by the way, like the Steelers taking down stuff of all six of their Super Bowl championships, or Terry Bradshaw, Mike Tomlin saying, no, we're not having Bradshaw and Swan and Lambert posters up anymore. It was only of the Pete Carroll era, the 14 years. It wasn't Largent and Zorn or Jack Patera in 1976 or Chuck Knox in the Seahawks first playoffs in 1984. It was just Pete Carroll's 14 years, which then gave Mike McDonald an entry to say, hey, this is going to be our wall, this era going forward now. And the players accepted that and understood that. Even the veteran players I talked to said, yeah, I get it. Young coach trying to make his mark and make a new legacy going forward. The problem, of course, is Mike McDonald hasn't even coached a practice yet, let alone a game. So the fans don't know him from anybody. He's come out from the East Coast, a New England native, a Baltimore Ravens defensive coordinator. They have nothing to judge him on but these reports that there's no longer Marshawn Lynch's Beastquake picture on the wall anymore. That's the only thing they have to judge Mike McDonald by so far. And I will say this, McDonald is no nonsense. He's very blunt. The players have described him with the word blunt. More than one player has described him to me that way. Mm-hmm. He mentioned that the number one pick in the Seahawks draft, Byron Murphy, the 16th pick overall, the defensive tackle from Texas, and the rookie minicamp, day two, he said that Byron Murphy needs to get in better shape. That's something Pete Carroll would never have said. It is different. And the players, it's going to take them a while to get used to Mike McDonald. He's much more direct than Pete Carroll was.
Sure. Let me just ask you really quick, too, Greg, and then we'll start getting you out of here. Again, I know first off season's still pretty new, but how's the relationship between McDonald and John Schneider? No one talks about John Schneider. He's one of the longest tenure GMs. I know with him and Pete Carroll, my sense was Pete Carroll was kind of running things overall, kind of had final say. What do you think that relationship is? Does Schneider have more power, more sway in the organization now?
Yeah, absolutely. This is John Schneider's first time being in charge of the franchise. And up until January, when they fired Pete Carroll, Carroll was the ultimate football authority and the final say on all football matters. It was Carroll who hired John Schneider in January 2010 to be a first-time general manager, not vice versa. And that's unusual in professional sports that the head coach has more authority than the GM. But that was how the Seahawks had to give Carroll that authority to get him out of USC and back into the NFL. Now it's John Schneider's show. And Jody Allen, the owner, and Burt Cold, the vice chair of the Seahawks, when they fired Carroll, they chose John Schneider's path going forward over Carroll's. Carroll wanted to keep all his assistant coaches, his coordinators, keep the same defensive system and approach, and thought he was closer than obviously John Schneider and the Seahawks ownership thought they were. So they chose Schneider's path to rip it all up and to go with the young, innovative defensive mind as a new head coach, bring in 21 new assistant coaches, all three coordinators new, all three playbooks brand new. They have a college offensive coordinator from the University of Washington, Ryan Grubb, who's going to be a first-time NFL play caller on offense this year. They have a never-before defensive coordinator, Aiden Durty, a native of Great Britain, in from the Dallas Cowboys, a position coach for Dallas, is the new defensive coordinator. They are starting completely over after missing the playoffs for the third time in 12 years. And it's John Schneider's game now. It is his decisions, the coaching staff. McDonald was his hire. The coordinators were his hires. The draft picks were his picks. This is him. And this is the first time in his 15 years in Seattle that it's the John Schneider show. Mike McDonald is subservient to that. He is absolutely second behind John Schneider. Of course, they're portraying it as a partnership, but it's clear that Schneider is the authority and McDonald is working within Schneider's framework. Schneider has not had that authority in 15 years here.
Greg, as we get you out of here, you covered Russell Wilson obviously for years and with the Seahawks and all. And look, we've already talked quite a bit, obviously, since Russell Wilson signed with Steelers, what we think they're getting in him and not getting at all. What are your quick thoughts on Russell Wilson to the Steelers? How do you see the fit? How do you maybe see that going?
I don't think he's done yet. I think there's a lot left in Russell Wilson. I think it went sideways from Nathaniel Hackett in the get-go in Denver. The whole drama of having his own quarterbacks coach in the building with his own office and rubbing people around, all of that, it went sideways from the start. I think that Mike Tomlin is going to be very good for him. I know Russell Wilson and I talk a lot outside of football when he was here. You're going to find a guy who your fans always and people on the outside always wonder how genuine Russell Wilson is. No one's going to outwork him and no one's going to outprepare him. If he's healthy and the Steelers can fix their offensive line, you're going to see the best Russell Wilson. He's on a 1-year prove it deal. He signed it because he believes he can prove it to the league and to the Steelers that he deserves a multi-year go around again. And I would be very surprised if he has anywhere resembling a Denver year in Pittsburgh. And at this point in his career, he needs an offensive line that gives him time because he's not going to be able to extend plays and get away from pressures like he did earlier in his career in Seattle. The Seahawks offensive line was really bad for a lot of the Seahawks in Russell Wilson's best years. And he made plays that should have never even happened. That's gone away from his career now that he's gotten older, of course. So if the Steelers, and they're on their path to doing it with their draft, and I thought Fatana was an outstanding pick for them, if they can fix that offensive line, you're going to get a Russell Wilson, I think, that the Steelers will want to re-sign after this year.
All right, great info. Greg, look, we knew which way you were going to stand on the DK Metcalf thing. We took our shot anyway. We have you set the record straight there. I know it's May 10th. Other things you'd rather be doing this morning.
Yeah, it's always good talking to you. I thought Brandon Ayuk was already in black and gold. I thought that was a done deal.
I tell you, Steeler fans are clamoring for something to add to that room. But, Greg, look, we appreciate you jumping on kind of on short notice to talk to me and Alex again. And we'd look to having you on the show in the future sometime again. So thanks for taking time with Dave and Alex on the Terrible Podcast again.
Anytime, guys. Thanks a lot. Be well.
Okay, coming out of our interview with Greg Bell, who covers the Seattle Seahawks, talking about DK Metcalf and Russell Wilson. We're going to move on to a first timer on the show, longtime beat writer. He covers the Denver Broncos right now for the Denver Gazette. He previously covered the Minnesota Vikings for several years for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. I'm talking about Chris Thomason. You can follow Chris on Twitter/X at Chris Thomason. Chris, first time on the Terrible Podcast. Welcome to the show.
Fantastic to be here. Thanks for having me.
Chris, we appreciate on such short notice. It's May. Normally, you're probably not doing these kind of interviews, talking about players on the roster, potentially ones maybe even traded. A lot of talk in, a lot of speculation in Pittsburgh about this team needing another wide receiver to add to that room. The names that kind of keep circulating outside of the couple of guys in San Francisco or DK Metcalf with the Seahawks and one Cortland Sutton with the Denver Broncos. We got the lowdown from Greg Bell why Steeler fans should not really be thinking anything about DK Metcalf in a post June 1st trade. So we're going to turn to you and get your lowdown on Cortland Sutton. You know, talk a little bit about, you know, what about the possibility of that? What's going on with Cortland Sutton? We know they drafted another wide receiver to go in that room there. What is the likelihood that the Denver Broncos could move Cortland Sutton post June 1st?
Well, I think it's all up in the air. I mean, basically on his contract, he's got $13 million base salary. I don't know if he's a $13 million player, and just $2 million of it is guaranteed. And he's reportedly grumbling and wanting a new contract, hasn't come to spring drills when the Broncos in March were jettisoning a number of players, including Russell Wilson, Justin Simmons, and didn't re-sign some free agents, traded Jerry Jeudy. He was grumbling on social media, basically. He tweeted out at one point a clip from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Will Smith, walking around in a living room devoid of furniture. But the Broncos said George Payton, general manager, before the draft, he insisted everything was fine. That, of course, was before they added Troy Franklin in the draft. They also got Josh Reynolds as a free agent previously with Detroit. But, you know, the bottom line is the Broncos kind of hold the keys for now because they can just kind of sit around and see how these new acquisitions look in spring drills and maybe even into training camp and decide then if they potentially want to trade Cortland Sutton. And even if they were to release him, the offset of his contract, he would sign with somebody else for more than $2 million, so they'd get their $2 million back. But basically, I would imagine there will be some sort of talks if the Broncos want to keep him about maybe signing with a reduced figure this year, but getting guaranteed money. So I think it's all up in the air, and the Broncos, they don't need to be in any rush. They can see how their receivers look in spring drills and move forward after that.
What is the old clip with Jim Carrey goes? So you're saying there's a chance, huh?
Well, you know, I mean, pretty much with any player that Sean Payton didn't inherit, or I should say, any player that Sean Payton inherited, there's a chance. I mean, he's rebuilding this team. He wants his own players and anybody who was around before he arrived. I imagine there's certainly a chance they might not be around anymore.
What would you think if indeed it came to a trade? What would you imagine some compensation being for that?
You know, I don't know. It all depends on the salary and that sort of stuff, maybe a mid-round type draft pick. I mean, I would think that if anybody were to trade for Courtland Sutton, they would want to resolve maybe his salary situation. And who knows if they'd want to pay him $13 million, which is what he's on the books for now, because the last thing you want to do is trade for him. And then you look at him when you get him and say, this isn't a $13 million player.
Chris, is Sutton's unhappiness, you kind of touched on it, but I just want to confirm, is it strictly financially related for a new contract, or is there a general unhappiness about kind of the retooling that Denver's been undergoing?
Well, I haven't talked to him, so I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but indications certainly are, with what he's put on social media, that he wasn't pleased with the roster moves in March, in which a lot of key players hit the road. But then again, they've since added Bo Nix as a quarterback. Maybe he likes that pick. I don't know. I haven't seen any response to him regarding that.
Gotcha. And then I wanted to ask about Russell Wilson too, obviously Pittsburgh's presumed starting quarterback for 2024. How did you view Wilson's and Peyton's relationship? Obviously it felt very strained towards the end of last year with the contract situation. And there was a report from CBS Sports that, you know, they had really tried to water down the playbook, or at least the play calling, using two words to try to help the offense go. Do you have any validity to that? Just give me a sense of how Wilson operated the offense and his relationship with Sean Payton.
Oh, well, what you touched upon was well reported last year. That's nothing new at all. I mean, there were a lot of incidents in which the play clock went down, and Sean Payton said that they were going to kind of dummy down some of the calls. He did wear a wristband at one point. And yeah, there was definite frustration between coach and quarterback. And a lot of it too was the Broncos thought that a lot of the sacks that Russell Wilson got were his fault, you know, and not getting rid of the ball or what have you. And normally people just associate sacks with the offensive line. And here the Broncos had gone out and spent tons of money on their offensive line, adding Mike McGlinchey and Ben Powers. They were the top two free agents they brought in March of 2023. And they thought that, you know, that was a key issue in Russell Wilson not being able to avoid sacks.
Chris, from what you know about Russell Wilson and looking ahead about his fit in Pittsburgh, obviously we've had time to break down his tape and all, and talked a lot about him, what we think on our side. What do you think about Russell Wilson's fit in Pittsburgh, and how do you see that going in 2024?
Yeah, I think he still can be effective, but, you know, he's going to be 36 in November, and people get spoiled, obviously, with a number of these Super Bowl-type winning quarterbacks who have been able to play into their 40s, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, et cetera. I mean, that's a rare type. I mean, most quarterbacks, when they hit their late 30s, they're not that effective anymore. I think he certainly still can be effective. I think he's still got something left in him, but I guess you would know better than I. It all depends on what the Steelers want and what they're looking for. I mean, obviously they got Justin Fields there, so I would think that there would be somewhat of a short leash on Russell Wilson. That's why when the NFL schedule comes out next Wednesday, I think it would be in the best interest to put that Pittsburgh at Denver game up very early in the season, maybe even Sunday night football, because that would take a lot of air out of it if it's in the middle of the season and Justin Fields is the Steelers quarterback.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what your thoughts on maybe a little bit of rumbling speculation. That's all it is at this point of what, you know, how early those two teams might meet. So we won't rehash that. What's your quick overview of the 2024 Broncos?
You know, I think that after there was a lot of grumbling by everybody in March about a lot of key players leaving and not exactly marquee free agents being brought in. I thought they certainly helped themselves in the draft. Bo Nix, I think, will fit Sean Payton's type of offense. Troy Franklin could end up being a steal as a wide receiver in the fourth round. They got Audric Estime, a running back out of Notre Dame, in the fifth round. So they got some key players in the draft. I mean, I certainly don't think that they're a playoff team. I mean, they can battle to maybe hopefully try to get to around what they were last year, 8-9. But I think if Bo Nix shows promise that he can be, you know, a decent NFL quarterback this coming year, I mean, that's going to buy Sean Payton some time. And so even if they're not a playoff team next year, I mean, unless Nix is terrible and they're dismal, you know, that'll keep people from complaining too much, perhaps, until 2025. But I would say it might be a good idea for Mr. Payton to at least be back in the playoffs by 2025.
All right, good stuff. Chris, look, I followed you a long time on Twitter/X. You do a great job of your NFL coverage, and look forward to reading your stuff with the Broncos this upcoming season. And when we find out when the Broncos and Steelers will face, hopefully we can have you back on the podcast to help us preview that game. And we know you have a busy schedule today, so Alex and I would like to thank you for jumping on first time on the Terrible Podcast with us today.
Thank you so much, guys. Good luck to you.
And welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. And again, our thanks to Greg Bell and Chris Thomason for their insights and information. Be sure to follow Greg on Twitter at GBellSeattle. Follow Chris on Twitter at Chris Thomason. Dave, good information from both those men.
Yeah, look, and we know they were kind of short, but you know, this time of the off season, we had angles we wanted to go after here, obviously talking about DK Metcalf and Cortland Sutton being so we talked about, you know, both those guys quite a bit and maybe the potential of the Steelers trading for one of those two guys. And obviously both those guys have covered Russell Wilson. So it's good to kind of get their thoughts on Russell Wilson as he begins his career with the Steelers here. On top of it there. So I don't know, you know, what the main takeaway here is it doesn't sound like they're, you know, to hear Greg Bell talk, it would be quite the development if DK Metcalf was traded to the Steelers. And I think when it comes to Cortland Sutton, that would be the more plausible of the two. Is that your sense you're getting now?
Sure. I think that was laid out pretty clear by both those guys. I've maintained that I think Sutton is the name that's made the most amount of sense based on his general unhappiness for the reasons that Chris laid out. And we'll see when we can hear from Cortland Sutton. He may not be reporting to a bunch of stuff here in the spring if he follows his current track. And then the connections to Pittsburgh, the cost, all those things tell me that Sutton is the most likely. But again, who knows when, if anything, on Cortland Sutton.
Right. And as we mentioned, look, if you know, at this point, anything were to happen with DK Metcalf, it most definitely would be after June 1st because of their cap situation and the dead money involved. As far as Cortland Sutton, it feels like that could, although it probably would behoove them a little bit, maybe with dead money and all like that, to wait until after June 1st as well, too, so they could spread that out a little bit there. But it feels like, you know, if either one of these guys were going to be acquired via trade, it feels like it would be after June 1st. And, you know, Greg's pretty emphatic that he doesn't think DK Metcalf's going to be on the move. And obviously, if they restructure his contract here in the next couple of weeks, you can automatically rule that out. So we get the word from the other side of the fence, so to speak, on both those guys. And, you know, that's good to move forward on.
All right, Dave, let's get through some reader emails and close out today's show.
All right, let me sort them out here real quick. I don't think we have a lot of them. Let's go to Chuck Griffith, who writes in, Dave, great coverage of the potential wide receivers. Here are two more names that I have not heard you mention. He's got Quentin Johnson, underperformed his rookie year, new regime that drafted three wide receivers and signed DJ Chark. similar to Treylon Burks, he writes. Jalen Waddle, he says, Miami has cap issues, drafted two wide receivers and signed Odell Beckham Jr., similar to DK Metcalf situation, he writes. And apparently AB posted something about the number 17. He says, wide receiver watch is bringing a bit of excitement to a typically dull period of the offseason. So what do you think about him talking about Quentin Johnson and Jalen Waddle maybe as potential guys? Trade. Quentin Johnson seems way too early, right?
I mean, he definitely struggled last year, and the points we'll take about the new regime, and there's no ties to Johnston, their first-round pick, but, man, he really struggled last year, and it's a little like Burks, but probably even worse, just because there's pedigree, but how much actual production are you getting? Are you getting a guy that's really going to be talented and can help you win? I'm not sure there, but I could see his availability with Waddle. I get what they've added, but, man, they can really trade Jalen Waddle, you know, when they're trying to make a run at this thing. I have a hard time believing that.
Yeah, I do as well, too. And Quentin Johnston, you know, once again, it feels like project more than prospect, you know.
Yeah, it's a good way to frame it.
All right, Chuck, appreciate that email there. Carrie wrote in, longtime listener. She's in Maryland there. I'm not going to go deep into this, but she was just – you know, we had some fun with me talking about cash and cap and joking how everybody always looks forward to that and all. But she wrote a very nice long email how some of it's hit home to her, even though she says sometimes the math isn't always mathing it. Sometimes that I sound like Charlie Brown's either parents or teachers, you know, wah, wah. I mean, sometimes that's the way I sound to my wife, to be honest with you, a lot of times there. But she just says that she picks up on a lot of this talk, and she kind of put her son, who is still a teenager, in place by things that she has gotten out of some of the talks about cash and cap and all like that. So, Carrie, I appreciate the email there, and yeah, I didn't want to go deep into it here, but it is fun to hear how sometimes this resonates with some people here. Let's see here if I got one more here. I don't know if we hit this the other day. Patrick Donovan writes in, first, let me say great job covering the draft. Regarding the wide receiver room, we know Tomlin and company love pedigree. So what are your thoughts on former first-round pick Treylon Burks with the Titans getting Tyler Boyd? I think we kind of hit on that when talking about Boyd the other day there. So I don't want to go down that. Look, I would not be opposed to going that route. I mean, obviously it'd be a cheap contract on Treylon Burks, but once again, is that a needle mover? Is that more project than prospect, I guess? Number two, he's got, with this coming year's draft being the last year of the COVID players' extra long year of college, do you think Tomlin and company would like to hold on to as many picks as possible? I guess he's talking about 2025 draft. Do we think the team would like to, because they're, you know, getting away from the COVID years here, would this team like as many draft picks as possible? It's hard to say this far out, Patrick. I mean, let's see how the season plays out. Let's see what the holes are. I mean, I don't really have a good answer for that, Alex.
Yeah, I don't really either. I mean, it just kind of depends. I think there is some value in that you kind of get back to some normalcy in the draft starting next year as you're kind of past all the six-year type, you know, COVID players and exceptions that have been given that made it an older class overall. And you had a really low number of underclassmen. I think those things will start to even out and look kind of pre-COVID for 2025. So there's probably at least a nugget of truth to that, but, you know, it just comes down to what opportunities you have come late this summer. Is there a chance to trade for somebody, you know, for a late round pick that's worth it? Do you have an injury that you suffer where you got to go get somebody? I mean, those variables are very tough to predict. So, you know, I think next year's draft is one component, but in terms of trading draft picks, you know, later this summer, I think it's going to really come down to what your opportunities are in a good draft next year. Won't prevent you from trading draft picks to go get a Cortland Sutton or a top name receiver if that becomes available.
All right. One more from Taylor Carpenter here out of Athens, Ohio. Have you ever been to Athens, Ohio?
Never been.
All right. Dave and Alex, lots of talk on recent podcasts regarding the need to add an outside receiver. I was curious on how Roman Wilson stacked up to Deontay Johnson. So I went and looked at their draft profiles and was surprised to find they have almost identical measurables. Roman Wilson actually profiled as being more athletic than Deontay based on his combine testing. He writes, my question is, why can't Roman Wilson fill Deontay's vacated role? He says, I understand Wilson has played primarily in a slot, but in reading Deontay's pre-draft profile, he projected as a slot as well due to his size with potential outside capabilities. Can you guys speak to the major differences you see in Roman versus Deontay entering the league as rookies? Was Deontay just that much better as an outside option coming out than Roman Wilson? Really appreciate the Depot crew. Best Steelers coverage, and it isn't even close. He says he never misses a podcast. Taylor, look, it's not that we don't think Roman Wilson can maybe eventually maybe become more of an outside guy. He obviously played a little bit of that at Michigan. He's talked, I think, on the Steel Here podcast that he's going to, especially during rookie minicamp, play inside and outside, and that should be expected. You want to see as much as what this guy can do the rest of the offseason here. I will say this about Roman Wilson's college tape versus what I remember about Deontay Johnson's college tape. You could really see Deontay potential X skills, I feel, coming out of Toledo than you could Wilson. And I think if I remember, he faced a little bit more press. They're just the ability to get off the line and the separation. Now, here's the other thing I remember about Deontay Johnson. His feet kept coming out from underneath him, and that ended up transferring over a little bit to the NFL as well, too. Cut so fast that he loses his feet sometimes. Mm-hmm. I feel like Deontay came out of college as off the line, a little bit better player, and just a little bit more all around better route runner than Roman Wilson. What say you, Alex Cazora?
No, I agree. I just pulled up some numbers here of just where he aligned. Deontay did his final 2 years at Toledo in 2018, 487 snaps out wide. In 2017, he was at 546 and played about 250 or so combined in the slot. So he was much more of a defined outside guy. I mean, the difference is just, dealing with press coverage. I mean, when if you're that backside X receiver, and again, I know guys move around and you're not as static as you used to be, but when you're the backside X receiver, you're facing press coverage. You're facing guys generally or typically rolled up on you, and you have to learn how to defeat that with your hands, your feet, your releases. Deontay got typecast because he was small as a slot receiver, but he played outside. He was kind of the guy at Toledo, and so he was always getting the best corner and always getting the attention and teams trying to take him away. At Michigan, Wilson, I think, was the top receiver, but there was so much talent and so many weapons, and he got schemed up so much where his releases were always free and he didn't have to deal with the press coverage, especially playing in the slot as much as he did. So, yes, Wilson will play outside some. He can play outside some. I don't want to say he's only a slot receiver. He is not. But he has to really learn the skill of working on press coverage, of being isolated, of being that backside guy where the scheme and leverage are not going to be as advantageous to you as, because if you're the slot receiver in college, you can release either side. You can run any route. If you're outside receiver and you got a cornerback aligned inside of you, your route tree is pretty limited at that point. You can go, come back or the go route, essentially. So it's just a different skill set it'll have to learn. So, heck, at this point, could Wilson get, is there vision for him to play a bunch on the outside based on the current roster? Maybe. We'll see. But there's going to be, I think, a transition period for him to learn how to beat press coverage.
And look, we're not saying he can't ultimately do this. Hopefully he can't. We got to see more of it on tape versus what he had at Michigan. And if he can do it.
Right. And as you mentioned in that Steel Here podcast, Wilson said he's working F and Z, not Deontay's X spot. So are they going to, you know, could they move Pickens around? Yeah, they could. And again, these guys will all play different spots. No one's going to be just put into one role. Pickens was more versatile last year than he was his rookie season, playing in the slot a whole lot more. So there will be that mixing and matching. But I just don't see Wilson as this, you know, come in right away, be your X receiver, your outside guy. I don't think he's there day one.
Remember, Deontay kind of snuck up on us in that draft, right? I know Daniel, I think, was working for us at the time, and I think he did the profile on him. And, you know, remember when they drafted Deontay, everybody thought, who?
Yeah, because he was also viewed as a later-round guy by a lot of outlets. Not all, but some viewed him as like a fifth-round pick.
Right, but you know, once you got into the tape, you kind of understood, you know, why he went where he went.
Yeah. I know that Daryl Drake, late Daryl Drake, was at that pro day and watched him and was really impressed. And so it made sense after he went back through the tape. But yeah, Deontay was not on our radar the way that Roman Wilson was on our radar.
Right. I'm trying to think back. I learned a lot more about Deontay after the Steelers drafted him than I knew about him before they drafted him. And I can't recall in those podcasts leading up to the draft us spending a lot of time talking about Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, I don't think so. We weren't as sophisticated as we are currently with our draft coverage and how comprehensive it is.
Oh, don't use sophisticated.
It's appropriate.
In any setting, don't use the word sophisticated with me.
But I think certainly we weren't attacking the draft the way that we attacked it in this capacity today. So, yeah, he'll get some looks there, but I wouldn't say that just because Deontay did it, Wilson can do it. I think they had two different skill sets, two different uses coming out of college.
All right. I think we got through the emails there.
Should have just asked you quickly earlier, and I apologize, just for what you're looking for at rookie minicamp, Dave. Our Jeremy Pike had a good article kind of previewing some things to watch out for. Want to see, is Fogatano going to play left or right side? I know Broderick Jones will not be in rookie minicamp, but just to see where Pittsburgh's going to start him, will they play him at both spots? Will Ryan Watts be a corner, safety, both? Anything you're looking for, rookie minicamp?
I think you just hit on two prime things right there. How much Roman Wilson moves around, I think we got a pretty decent idea just based on what he had said about that. Let's see here. What else kind of maybe sticks out?
Where do you think Fautani takes most or all the reps at, if you had to guess right now, left or right tackle? I'll say right just to be different. And some of the reporting is suggesting right, but I think he probably plays both this weekend.
I'm all up for getting as much as you can on the right side.
Yeah, if they're gonna if they think he's gonna be a right tackle, they need to commit to that and have him start repping there right now because he's not played it, and so he's got to start getting on that moving train to start getting some reps there.
Obviously interested to hear what the early returns are on Beanie Bishop. So much fanfare on an undrafted, you know, guy, you know, at a position that Steelers could use some help at. They're obviously, the typical stuff that Peyton Wilson ought to pick this stuff up quick. You know, this is a guy that you would probably expect. Man, this guy plays like he knew all the plays. You know, especially with his closing ability and just, you know, leadership and the amount of snaps he played at NC State and. You know, what's been written about how quickly he's supposed, you know, there should be nothing but a lot of positive stuff coming out of guys like Peyton Wilson, I would think. You know,
I agree. That's a good point. I think that you're going to hear a bit about him covering ground, making plays in coverage. Again, it's tough to really evaluate, you know, skill in a setting like this that's padless and it's, you know, you're just getting everyone understanding where to line up and how an NFL practice works. And it's just kind of this hodgepodge of names. But, you know, I think Wilson is a guy that you would expect to hear some positive reviews just based on some, you know, baseline skill sets and traits that he has. Will Mason McCormick get some center reps? Wouldn't shock me if they're going to try him at some different spots there, especially with a smaller roster right now. You won't have the typical centers in the mix right now until they get all together for OTAs. I'll be watching for that as well. Obviously, Zach Frazier will take most of the reps and he'll be playing center, but McCormick might rotate in a little bit as well.
Did you watch the, I don't know, 5-6 minute, 7 minute video that Dan Orlovsky posted either yesterday or day before on the playbook? Yeah, on the playbook.
I saw it. I think he posted a part two today. I did not watch the video though.
In so many words, he goes over what's thrown at him and how you know, the younger guys are essentially thrown the full playbook like three times during the offseason. You know, they get it right at rookie mini camp and kind of dumped in their lap. And then again during I think he said mandatory mini camp, and then obviously in training camp. And the whole, the thing that I gotta, he goes through of how much their, first section is, what is a huddle, and
yeah, because a lot of these guys in college didn't huddle,
right? The verbiage and pre-snap, audibles and stuff like that. And that's before even getting into the plays. And, it's the main takeaway is, and it's an obvious thing here is teams want to see how quickly a lot of these guys can grasp as much as they can grasp, especially in a stating, setting like rookie mini camp here. And I would imagine the faster that some of these guys pick this up, especially these tryout guys and how quickly they move and function within that will go a long way in deciding if a couple of these guys get signed, after this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different world from college, and Orlovsky's time is even different than where the college system is at right now, where a lot of these guys didn't huddle the way that you get play calls in. Now, I don't assume they're not doing radio calls in a situation like this, but you're getting actual play calls in college. A lot of it is turn and look at the cards where they have like the crazy signs that are up, and that's how you get the calls in, because college football does not have headset communication until I think this year. They're finally changing that, but that's not going to matter as much for the left guard, but it's going to matter for these quarterbacks that are in there right now. And it's just tough because there's just so many new pieces all around. So you're just trying to have the fundamentals of let's have a clean snap and let's get no one's false starting and let's get everyone lined up properly, know what routes we're running. Those are the basic things to look for. And for the tryout guys, any of these guys, the guys that are conditioned, the guys that take the coaching, that make a mistake once, don't make it again once they're told, once they're corrected, and the guys who make a couple plays. If you do those things in rookie minicamp, like that's what I'm looking for. Just guys who are in good shape, who are smart, take the coaching, make a play or two. You do that these 3 days, you're sitting pretty.
All right, I did not see part two. I saw part one, so I'll have to watch that later today.
I think he just posted out. Maybe I'm wrong. I just was scrolling on Twitter here, and there was somebody that was doing an in-depth on one particular play, another quarterback, I think. But Orlovsky just put up a second video to check out.
All right, so if you're listening to this, you're looking for something to watch, hit the Dan Orlovsky Twitter feed. So I found that quite interesting.
All right, Dave, anything else? If not, we'll get out of here and come back Monday and see what the rookie minicamp news of the day is.
All right. Well, let's see. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter/X at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button up right navigational bar. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button. Follow the directions that way. So appreciate everybody listening today. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.